Hey y'all, I'm Sammy, your host of the You Were Made for More podcast. John 10:10 is a promise that Jesus came down to earth so that we would have life and have it abundantly. My prayer is that this podcast and all of the content that we put out would remind every student that they were made for more, simply because of who they were created to be. My own walk with the Lord and my relationships with the teenagers that I disciple have shown me that once we understand whose we are, the game changes. Or in other words, transformation happens. Our identity changes everything. We recognize that it takes investment and partnership between the church and parents to raise teens who know and believe who they are in Jesus. And we're here to help. So buckle up as we take this journey and take a look at what God has to say about friendships, relationships, sexuality, dating, and all the things in between. Today on the podcast, I am really excited to share this conversation with you. I am going to be interviewing Professor Nancy Piercy. Many of the ethical issues our culture is wrestling with have an underlying issue in common. There's so much growing confusion that we see around us on issues such as abortion, euthanasia, homosexuality, transgenderism, and sexual promiscuity. And all of these things, all of this confusion tends to flow downstream from our lack of understanding of what the human body is, what it was created for, and what it means in our day-to-day lives. One person who has sought to account for this confusion and to offer a corrective narrative for it is Nancy Piercy, the professor of apologetics at Houston Baptist University. And you may be familiar with some of her books, such as Finding Truth and Total Truth. She also has written Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. And this is what our conversation is going to focus on today, is her book and the content in that. In order, and in my hope is that it would provide a biblical account of what it means to be made in God's image as men and women. There is a reason that our podcast exists. There's a reason that Professor Piercy does the work she does, and that's because there's a reason the Ten Commandments start with the command to love and worship God above all other things. Because when our hearts are centered on God, only then are we empowered to fulfill the rest of the commandments that deal with behavior like what we do with our body. So I'm super pumped for this conversation. Get your notepads and pens ready, and let's dive into this conversation with Professor Piercy. All right, Nancy, amen. Well, thank you for joining me today. Our conversation today is really going to be all about your book, Love Thy Body, and I love the message that I've read it. I love the message that it portrays. That's kind of what our podcast is all about, is about issues of the gospel and sexuality and relationships, and I figure you would be the perfect person to talk to us today. So I'm going to highlight a few questions from your book that I think are going to kind of encourage people to think more deeply about our physical bodies and how and why they matter to God. So the first question I have for you, first of all, if you want to give us a little bit of just like what your life looks like on a daily basis. I'm going to intro you separately, but sometimes it helps to hear from you about what you're up to. And then kind of go into telling us about what encouraged you to start thinking theologically about the physical body and what that kind of looked like for you personally.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So I teach at Houston Christian University. Until recently, it was Houston Baptist. So I have to remember we are now Houston Christian. And I teach apologetics. And so what that means is I get to spend the whole day teaching young people how to argue for the existence of God, which to me is my dream job. I just love it. And it reflects the reason I became a Christian. I became a Christian through apologetics. I had a lot of questions about how do we know Christianity is true? And what about all of these secular isms? I was pretty drawn into a lot of secular ideas. And so it was through the work of Francis Schaeffer. Some of your listeners may know him because he and C.S. Lewis, Francis Schaeffer and Lewis, were essentially the top apologists of the 20th century in terms of the sheer number of people who converted through their work or were brought through a crisis of faith through their work. And so for me, it was conversion. It was through being at Francis Schaeffer's ministry, which is in Switzerland. We had lived in Europe when I was a child. And so after high school, I'd gone back. And that was the first time I encountered Christian apologetics. I mean, I had no idea Christianity could be supported with good reasons and arguments, and that Christianity had answers to all of the secular isms that I had absorbed by that time. So that's how I ended up, all my writing, all my teaching, everything has something to do with apologetics because I have such a heart for the young people who are the kind of questions I had when I was young.
That's awesome. I love C.S. Lewis, so I love that you mentioned him. His work is so good, and I think that a lot of people can relate to the way that he teaches and the words that he uses and things like that. So reading your book myself, one of the things that I started to think about, and as I kind of processed the ideas that you mentioned in there, were really the negative ways, and the negative views that we have of our bodies, because of things that culture talks about, or because of cultural issues and things like that. Can you talk about some ways where we can actually see a negative view of the body and culture, and kind of how that impacts us in the way that we think?
Yeah, so my book, Love Thy Body, deals with a host of the most controversial issues of our day, from abortion and euthanasia to homosexuality and transgenderism and so on. And what I do in the book is I show that really it's your view of the body that is driving all of these issues. And that, well, I talked about apologetics, but people are no longer asking, is Christianity true? They're asking, why are Christians such bigots? And so in my book, I actually turn the tables and I show that it's the secular world and the secular ethic that is based on a low view of the body, a harmful, demeaning view of the body. And I'll start, I'll just start with the most obvious one, which is transgenderism, right? Because transgender activists argue explicitly that your gender identity has nothing to do with your physical body, with your biological sex. There's a BBC documentary on the subject, and it said at the heart of the debate is the idea that your mind can be at war with your body. And of course, in that war, it's the mind that wins. Or there was another BBC video that was aimed at teenagers. It showed a young girl who identified as non-binary. And she tells these teenagers, this is a direct quote, it doesn't matter what living meat skeleton you've been born in, it's what you feel that defines you. So do you see that your body has been reduced to a meat skeleton? Or another example that I found and I put in the book is a male to female transsexual who had a Kickstarter page for a documentary titled I Am Not My Body. And I thought, whoa, that title says it all, right? The claim is that my body has nothing to do with who I am. It's not part of my authentic self. There was even, so this was not in my book because it's more recent, but the Washington Post had an article where it told first grade teachers to tell their students, even if you have what some people call boy body parts, doesn't mean you're a boy. And even you have, notice it didn't say boy body parts, it says what some people call boy parts. And then it said, of course, and just because you have what some people call girl parts does not mean you're a girl. So young people all the way down to that was first grade, and all the way down to kindergarten even, are coming home and saying, you know, my teacher says just because you have a girl parts doesn't mean you're a girl. So what am I? How do I know what I am? So the secular view today has a very low view of the body, that it has nothing to do with who you are. It gives you no moral message. It gives you no clue to your identity. It is irrelevant. It is insignificant. And you can simply ignore it and go with your feelings. So I would say that's a very low view of the body. And that gives us an opportunity to present the Christian view then as having a very high view of the body. You know, the meaning, significance, purpose of the body, it does tell us who we are. It is meant to be an integrated part of the complete person. It shares in the dignity of the whole person.
Yeah, that's so good. I think that something that I did for a lot of years in my young 20s was I would go into public high schools and teach sexual education. And one of the main things that we did was talk about the interrelated parts of who you are, right? The physical, the emotional, the spiritual, the intellectual, even financial and social parts of you. And it was interesting to see high school students think critically about those things, because you're right, it starts from a very, very young age that we start to separate the physical body from the rest of who we are, when the Bible says the complete opposite. So I love that you highlight that. I love that your book talks about that. And I think that as parents, that's something that we have to be aware of, right? Because our kids are growing up in this culture that is intentionally telling kids that they are separate from all the parts of them that God created to be good and holy and very good, you know? So I wanted to hit on that question because I think it's essential to the debate, right? Any of these issues we talk about, you're right, it goes down to what we think of the body and the view that we give the body. So yeah, I love that. In your book, you also say that today's headline-grabbing issues all share a common underlying worldview. Can you talk a little bit about what that worldview is and how it explains all of these other issues that you mentioned transgenderism and abortion and euthanasia and all of those things. But it also just explains things like homosexuality and gender dysphoria and things like that. Can you chat with us a little bit about that worldview to kind of help people grasp a hold of it?
Yeah, so the thesis of the book is that if we, you know, I'm trying to help Christians understand the secular worldview, right? Because we're not going to be effective unless we recognize, you know, how to talk to secular people and how to train our children to recognize secular views. So, you know, part of my job is to read what the academics say. So let me tell you, this was the first book by an academic defending transgenderism. And I thought it captures the heart of the worldview, because she said, on the one hand, she said that there's a Princeton University professor saying transgenderism involves disconnect, self-alienation, you know, the separation of the body and the person. And then she says, that doesn't really matter, though, because, and this is a direct quote, what the physical body tells us is nothing. It has no meaning at all. And I thought, well, that's putting it bluntly, that your body has no meaning at all. You know, it's not part of your authentic self. And sometimes, like you said, the examples can help. So let's look at something like homosexuality. It's not quite as easy to see there, but even my homosexual friends will agree that on the level of biology, physiology, anatomy, chromosomes, that males and females are counterparts to one another. That is how the human sexual and reproductive system is designed. So what that means is to embrace a same-sex identity then is to reject that design. It's to say, well, why should my body have any say in my moral choices? You know, why should my biological sex as male or female have any say in my sexual identity. And so we have to help people to see that even this, as you know, defending homosexuality by saying, "My, you know, well, I can just go against my body. I can just contradict my body." That's a very disrespectful view of the body. What it's saying is that my body is not part of my authentic self. I can contradict it with I can go with sexual feelings that contradict that. I can identify my sexual orientation in contradiction to the obvious design of my body. And I'll even give you another quote. So this was Camille Paglia, is a fairly well-known public intellectual, and she's a lesbian. And she's kind of interesting because she says, sex is not a social construction. She literally says, nature made us male and female. We are designed, she uses the word designed, which is a bit interesting for an atheist. She says, we are designed for sexual reproduction. And you say, well, how do you defend being a lesbian then? And here are her exact words. She said, well, nature made us male and female, but why not defy nature? After all, fate, not God, has given us this flesh. We have absolute claim to our bodies and may do with them as we see fit. So that's from the horse's mouth. You know, this is from a secular person who's defending lesbianism and saying, if we are products, if our bodies are products of mindless, meaningless, purposeless forces, then they have no intrinsic purpose that we're morally obligated to respect. They have nothing to do with our moral choices. We can do with them as we see fit. So that's kind of the bigger worldview behind this. All of these issues on the body is, are our bodies products of mindless material forces, or are they the creation of a loving creator, and therefore they do have purpose and meaning?
That is so, that word choice, that quote, how she uses design is so interesting, because as a non-Christian, as an atheist, right, that's, it's funny because I as a Christian, you see how the Bible and science actually confirm one another, right? And I think culture tries to make us think the opposite, but in a lot of ways, when you look at how people think and the words that they use, you can see kind of underneath their view is a view, in essence, that there is something greater at play than just nature. You know what I mean? So I've always thought, I like that you bring up that quote, because I think that that is interesting. And I think now that we have kind of like a good view of what your book, I'm gonna link to your book and to your website and to all of your other resources. For those of you listening, Nancy has a lot of other books besides the one that we're highlighting today. So I will link to all of those in the show notes and things like that. But the one reason I wanted to really have this conversation with you is because I am a parent, and a lot of our listeners are parents. They're parents of kids who are in the church and go to youth group and have a Bible-centered worldview already. And, you know, that's true. My kids are very, very young. They're 3.5 and 7 months. And we're kind of, I have friends and I personally am in the thick of raising little kids and understanding how to have these conversations with them at an age-appropriate level, right? But how to start this Bible-centered thinking from a very young age. So the last thing I kind of want to talk about, you know, obviously going to encourage people to read your book and go to your website and things like that, but I wanted you to highlight for us maybe why and how can we as Christians teach theologically about the body? What are some practical steps that we can really focus on as we tackle these topics with our families?
Oh, that's a great question. So what I do is I kind of have to counter the typical stereotype is that Christians are just negative, right? That when they deal with these moral issues, their message is, it's a sin, it's wrong, don't do it, it's against the Bible. and there's something wrong with you. You know, that's, and that's, there's some truth to that, but it comes across as purely negative. One of my students put it this way: growing up in the church, I was always taught spirit good, body bad. And so we need to counter that. And, you know, we don't have to do it by ourselves. We need to just reconnect with our own heritage, because all the way back to the early church, it faced a culture that also had a very negative view of the body. It was for somewhat different reasons, but the ancient Greek and Roman culture devalued the material world because of things like Gnosticism. And a lot of the early church, a lot of the books in the New Testament, in fact, are written against Gnosticism and Platonism and Manichaeism. Augustine was a Manichae for a while. And all of these isms treated the material world as the realm of death, decay, and destruction. And Gnosticism even taught that there were several levels of spiritual entities, and that it was the lowest one, who was an evil god who made this universe, because this universe is evil. So it was created by an evil god. And they called the body the prison of the soul, the prison of the soul. So they have a very low view of the body. And what Christianity did in this culture, Christianity was revolutionary. For starters, it said the universe was not created by an evil, low-level god. It was created by the highest, you know, the supreme deity, who is a good god. And therefore, this universe is intrinsically good. And yes, there's been a fall. But the fall is a little like a beautiful artistic masterpiece, and a child comes and scribbles on it with magic marker. You know, it is defaced, but you can still see the original beauty. Mm-hmm. And that's how we should communicate with people, is to, you know, the original beauty of God's creation still shines through. Mm-hmm. And then in the first century, I have to tell you, the greatest scandal was actually the incarnation. The idea that the same supreme deity who created the universe had also entered into the universe and mm-hmm. taken on a physical body. So the incarnation was the ultimate affirmation of the dignity of the human body. And then when Jesus was executed on a Roman cross, mm-hmm. we might say he did escape from the physical world, which is what Gnosticism taught we should aspire to do. You know, we should escape this prison of the body. But what did he do then? You know, he came back in a physical body. To the ancient Greeks, this was not spiritual progress. Mm-hmm. They literally argued, who would want to come back to the realm of the body? And so, and then finally, at the end of time, what's going to happen? God is not going to scrap the physical world as if he made a mistake the first time around. Scripture teaches he's going to renew it and restore it, creating a new heavens and a new earth. And he's also going to raise us physically. You know, that all the way back to the Apostles' Creed, the church has affirmed the resurrection of the body. This is an extremely high view of the physical world. There's nothing like it in any other religion or philosophy. And that's why we should be utterly positive and excited when we communicate it to others. It's a life-giving message. The good news is not just salvation. The good news is creation. That we're created by God, and that this world and our bodies have meaning and purpose because they're the handiwork of a loving creator.
That's so good. I love that you talked about that in the view of like creation, fall, redemption, resurrection. I think that that's a beautiful way to focus on teaching about the body and seeing the beauty and what God has done throughout his story and the story of the world and the story of humanity. And I think that from any age you can do that well in a theological manner. So I love that. I know I'm going to use that as I'm always reading and praying about like how to have these conversations with my daughter. And I think for young women, especially like growing up in this culture, it is very challenging to see yourself as beautiful, especially when you look at social media and all of the things that the world emphasizes. And I know a lot of students who listen to this podcast relate to that. So That's a great picture of looking at God's handiwork in the story of creation, fall, redemption and resurrection and things like that. So, well, Nancy, thank you so much for having this conversation with us. I'm excited to kind of get the word. I know your book is already out there for the world to see, but I know that our listeners are gonna be blessed by reading it. So I just thank you for your work and your words and your book, and just pray that it would bless a lot of people. And thank you for taking the time to chat with us today.